First Name Sports starts now.
We're kind of on a first name basis around here.
On the Sports Map Radio Network.
Okay, let's get started.
From the Sports Map Radio Studios, here's Greg Frank.
What's going on, America? It's Monday afternoon on the Sports Map Radio Network. Hope everybody's weeks are off to a good start. We're going to make them a little bit better over the next 2 hours as we are down to 16 in the NCAA Division I men's basketball tournament as we get a three-day break before the second weekend begins with regional action on Thursday in New York and Las Vegas before Friday is when the regionals get underway in Louisville and Kansas City. John Belmer, our producer. Belmer, I had one of those. I don't know if you ever do it sometimes when you wake up. I do it sometimes on this show. But today I woke up for a minute, and for like a good 30 seconds, I didn't know what day of the week it was. Sometimes it just like takes me a moment to like get my bearings, like, you know, kind of get going for like, as I said, 30 seconds. And I was like, I'm not going to look at my phone. Like, I'm just going to think, like, for a minute, I was like, oh, man, maybe it's Wednesday or Thursday. Nope, Monday.
Well, so, that's what happens when you're off for the weekend.
Well, right, exactly. And as we were saying, like, you never wake up on Wednesday and think it's Monday, and then you're like, oh, it's Wednesday. We're closer to the weekend. Like, it's always the inverse where you think you're later in the week than you are.
You wake up on, like, Tuesday, and you're like, it's Friday, and then you're like, oh, dang.
Nope. Exactly. So I didn't allow myself to think today was Thursday or Friday, but there was, like, a 30-second pause today when I woke up where I wasn't sure. And then I was like, wait. First weekend of the tournament just ended. Now we got it. What was I doing? Yeah, it's usually what I do. It's like, what was I doing the day before? What was I watching? And then I start using my sports-centric brain to put the rest of the pieces of the puzzle together as we roll on. And listen, let's start there. Congratulations to the 16 teams that are still playing in this tournament, because it is amazing how quickly this thing all ultimately culminates in one national champion. A week ago, we're on this show, and we're talking about the field of 68 and which teams are overseeded, which teams are underseeded, and the bubble. And now, 7 days later, 52 of the 68 teams are done. And for as much as we love the first weekend, and I have long said, and I'm sure a lot of people will agree with me, Thursday and Friday of the week that just concluded are the best 2 weekdays in all of sports because of the wire-to-wire action that we have. There's also a wire-to-wire sense of finality that comes with those 2 days and into the weekend. Wherein, as I said, in 1 week's time, the field has shrunk from 68 all the way down to 16. So if you're one of those 16, understand that this is an accomplishment. That you have dodged the first two bullets. That's kind of how I look at this thing. To win the thing, you got to dodge six bullets. Because as you saw with Purdue on Friday night, every time you step on the court between those lines, you are vulnerable. I don't care what school you are or what the name is on the front of the jersey. Gosh. The Kentucky team that is probably the greatest collection of college basketball talent ever assembled in 2015 did not win the whole thing. So you have to dodge six bullets when you enter this tournament to win it. And if you've dodged two of those six thus far and you're still playing, good on you. It is an accomplishment to get to the Sweet 16. Some of the reactions and some of the takeaways from the weekend. Let's start with that historic upset. The Fairleigh Dickinson Knights upset the Purdue Boilermakers on Friday night in the round of 64. And again, one of the things that's beautiful about this tournament is how quickly, out of thin air, storylines can emerge. Fairleigh Dickinson on Wednesday night, a lot of people felt like maybe Texas Southern would win in the first four because Texas Southern has been in that play-in game and done the whole go-to-Dayton thing and the routine. No, Fairleigh Dickinson took that game and moved on within the state of Ohio from Dayton to Columbus. And then they beat Purdue. And then all of a sudden, overnight, we all knew, I mean, many people probably knew where Fairleigh Dickinson was located on Friday night and did not know where Fairleigh Dickinson was located the day prior. Many people knew who Tobin Anderson was, and we did not know who Tobin Anderson was the day prior. I'll admit that. I did know that Fairleigh Dickinson was in North Jersey, but that's also only because I grew up a couple hours south of Fairleigh Dickinson. So there's a beauty in that. And remember, last year, ironically enough, it was another North Jersey school, St. Peter's. And Shaheen Holloway's rise to the national stage. And, of course, we still have Princeton playing. Now, again, you probably know Princeton because it's an Ivy League school. It's an excellent academic institution. But out of thin air, when these storylines pop up, it can only happen in this sport, in this tournament. Because think about it. In the NFL or in the NBA or any of the pro leagues, there is a comfort level that you have with the fact that all of these guys are in the NBA. They're all in the NFL. So the variance of talent is not going to be as wide. Fairleigh Dickinson was the smallest team out of 360-some programs in Division I. Fairleigh Dickinson was the smallest team by average height. And Purdue had a guy that was like 7'5 in Zach Edey. So again, the variance, the range of roster talent that you can have in college basketball is wider than any other sport that is widely consumed across this country. Certainly the four major North American pro leagues. And in college football, you don't see this kind of thing happen. And so only in March Madness can a story like this emerge. And it's really cool. And what we should do is celebrate Fairleigh Dickinson and not tear down Purdue. Because when you think about it, in a one-game scenario with a bunch of college kids, and here's what happened on Friday night. The Fairleigh Dickinson kids began to believe. And all of a sudden, you got kids who never had any pressure on themselves to begin with as a 16, who then believe and start playing with confidence. And there was the clip of Tobin Anderson going around the locker room with Fairleigh, I believe after they beat Texas Southern in the round of the play-in round, saying, the more I watch Purdue, the more we can beat them. And he didn't care if he was going to be an old takes exposed clip or whatever. And so those kids always believed they could win. And then when the reality started to set in that all of America watches, says, wait a second, they can win. Then it felt like Purdue really started to feel it. And then at that point, you throw the seeds out the window. It's college kids for Purdue that really started to feel the pressure. And how do you comport yourself when that happens? That's why we were on the air when Xavier managed to pull it out against Kennesaw State on Friday. A win like that is really impressive when you think about the fact that the moment didn't get too big for Xavier, and they did not succumb to the pressure because it got Purdue. So when you think about it in that light, it's kind of surprising that we haven't seen more 1-16 upsets. This was only the second one in the history of the tournament. So this is all my way of saying celebrate FDU, do not tear down Purdue, because a lot of other programs, Virginia, obviously, it did happen to in 2018, and Virginia won the national championship the next year. But we've seen 15s beat 2s. Princeton in this tournament, St. Peter's in last year's tournament, Norfolk State within the last decade won a game as a 15 seed. Middle Tennessee State beat Tom Izzo as a 15 seed, beating a 2. College kids, I don't care what your seed is. I don't care what the name on the front of the jersey is. This can happen. The tournament can get you. So I'll go to bat for Matt Painter and Purdue here, because all they do is win the Big Ten regular season title seemingly every year. And the people that want to call for his head and that want to fire, that's crazy talk to me. I understand that this is where the stakes rise and that this is the most important stage in the sport, but that does not invalidate what he has built in West Lafayette and what they've done from November until February, seemingly every year. And Virginia, the fact that we still do this and we still have people calling for Matt Painter's head, and Purdue is under, a lot of people do want to tear down Purdue rather than just celebrate Fairleigh Dickinson. That to me is not what this tournament's about. Purdue just, it's happened to him a couple times now, But the Boilermakers have been a victim of the beauty of this tournament. Is if we want to celebrate the low seeds, that means they're beating a high seed. And yeah, it's been Purdue a few times. But if Matt Painter hadn't already built so much equity up in West Lafayette with that program and gotten them to the point where they are always a high seed, let's not forget the legwork that it takes just to get to that point, just to have the one in front of your name in the bracket. So, if anything, this makes me really pull for Matt Painter and Purdue next season. Good for Fairleigh Dickinson. And they did not whittle last night. Yeah, sure, Florida Atlantic ends up winning. And Florida Atlantic got out to a 9-0 start, but Fairleigh Dickinson settled in, and they were a few plays away from going to the Sweet 16 at Madison Square Garden, which would have been really cool. So, that I got plenty of other things from the tournament that I want to get to. But the first thing that I wanted to start with today was, let's celebrate Fairleigh Dickinson, because we didn't know, most people didn't know where the school was located a week ago, didn't know who Tobin Anderson was a week ago, and now everybody knows those guys. Everybody knows the program, and we'll see if they're able to kind of become a mainstay as a low major and make the tournament year in and year out. I you don't know. It's a one-bid league that they play in, the NEC. So certainly don't take this for granted, and I'm sure the Fairleigh Dickinson alum and the players and Tobin Anderson will not. As I said, more tournament reactions to get to. Eric Musselman, Tom Izzo, a couple of really good jobs over the weekend. That's next.
We're taking you through the brackets on the Sports Map Radio Network, presented by BlueChew.com. Guys, it's all about confidence, and confidence is what you get with the chewables from BlueChew.com. Blue Chew is a unique online service that delivers the same active ingredients as Viagra and Cialis, but in chewable form at a fraction of the cost. And for Sports Map Radio listeners, try Blue Chew free when you use our promo code MADNESS at checkout. That's BlueChew.com, promo code MADNESS, to receive your first month free. Now, back to the show.
Alrighty, we are back here on a Monday afternoon. Plenty of more tournament reactions to get to as we open the show with an ode to the Fairleigh Dickinson Knights and the week that was for that program. And now we'll talk about some of the other storylines from the round of 32 and programs that are still playing as we shift our attention to the regionals. How about Eric Musselman and the Arkansas Razorbacks? I understand Bill Self wasn't there, but Kansas is the defending champion. A lot of players on the Kansas team that won a national championship last year. And Arkansas sends the Jayhawks home with a 72-71 victory in the West region, in Des Moines, and the Razorbacks move on to play Connecticut in the regional semifinal in Vegas this week. Eric Musselman is becoming, if you don't believe this already, one of the best coaches in college basketball. Eric Musselman has made the Sweet 16 three consecutive years in every tournament that he's been at Arkansas for, because he got hired in the 1920 season, which obviously was halted due to the pandemic. So every year he's been in Arkansas that there has been an NCAA tournament, Eric Musselman has been in the second weekend. And I just opened the show talking about how impressive I believe of an accomplishment it is just to get to the second weekend of the tournament. There are schools that are Division I that you'll go a lifetime without seeing get to the Sweet 16. Generations, sometimes, of alums that won't see that school get to the Sweet 16. Eric Musselman has Arkansas in the Sweet 16 for the third year in a row. And a staple about Eric Musselman's teams is that they are able to always play their best at this time of year. As a 7 seed at Nevada 5 years ago, Eric Musselman got to the Sweet 16. As an 8 seed now at Arkansas, with a team that, coming into the year, there was a lot of buzz about. Arkansas was a preseason top 10 team, and here the Razorbacks are now, after they were unranked most of the season because the regular season was a little up and down for the Hogs. Here they are now, still playing, and set to take on Connecticut in Sin City this week. Eric Musselman just knows how to win this time of year. And there is a skill in figuring out how to get your teams to hit their apex right now. Because you got to be playing your best this time of year. And that's what makes for a real intriguing game against Connecticut. Because we'll certainly, you know, get to them. But UConn, very impressive two games for the Connecticut Huskies in Albany against Iona. And then last night against St. Mary's. Speaking of knowing how to win this time of year, Tom Izzo does it yet again as the Michigan State Spartans are through to the Sweet 16. Michigan State was my pick to get out of this region. I thought every year I'll do this. I like to kind of deem a region a drunk region, as I call it, where you look at the high seeds and you say, I don't know if I like a lot here. I don't know about Purdue. There were some spotty losses for the Boilermakers in the regular season. I didn't know about Marquette. We know about Shaka's history in the tournament after the VCU run over a decade ago now. It hasn't been great. The number three seed in this region is Kansas State. They were a little bit inexperienced. The new coach, I wasn't sure if they could make a deep run. Now, they will be the opponent for Michigan State in the Sweet 16. The number four seed was Tennessee. They're still playing, but Rick Barnes has a bad history in March. Duke was the five here. I felt like, okay. They didn't really play that well in the regular season. They were inconsistent. I don't know if their hotness will just continue all the way to get to the Final Four. And the sixth seed was Kentucky, very similar. Not a great regular season. That left me thinking Michigan State could make a run here, and the Spartans are through to the Sweet 16 after they defeat the Marquette Golden Eagles yesterday in Columbus. And I tell you, they got guards, which when all things break down and you need a guy to just get you a bucket in the half-court offense, A.J. Hogard and Tyson Walker certainly can do that for the Spartans. And pretty cool with both of those guys being from the Northeast. Tyson Walker's from New York, so he gets to go home for the regionals. And A.J. Hogard is from a Philly suburb in Pennsylvania, Coatesville, so I'm sure he'll have a lot of family at the world's most famous arena on Thursday night. But those two guards for Michigan State are what make the Spartans very dangerous as far as I'm concerned. And Tom Izzo has now won 16 games in the NCAA tournament as a lower seed in the game. Yesterday, Michigan State is 7 seed to Marquette's 2 seed. That's what makes a very good tournament coach, is when you can get more done with less talent. And Izzo does this over and over again, and I think maybe headed for another Final Four. So, bravo, Tom Izzo. Other things that I take from, I mentioned Kansas State. Pretty cool that Jerome Tang, in his first year in Manhattan, not Manhattan, New York, Manhattan, Kansas, is in the second weekend. He will be playing in Manhattan on Thursday against Tom Izzo and the Michigan State Spartans. But Kansas State, honestly, they were just better than Kentucky yesterday. And Jerome Tang said it. We had more dudes than Kentucky yesterday. You want to talk about good guard play? I mentioned the guys from Michigan State. How about Marquise Noel yesterday for the Kansas State Wildcats? 27 points, 9 assists, shoots 7 for 14 from the field, and hits a trio of triples, say that 5 times fast, as the Kansas State Wildcats win it 75-69 over Kentucky. And on the losing end, you know, they're not exactly, things aren't all fine and dandy in Lexington. Funny how that all kind of, the recency bias that creeps in with fan bases in these big-time college towns. Really, if you're not a fan of Kentucky, I believe it's great humor when you look at how mad all the fans are in Lexington about John Calipari. Some of the headlines on the Cats Illustrated message board: leave this idiot on the tarmac with his dog. Will this ever be fun again? Kentucky basketball is dead. Fire him tonight. Yet another garbage season. Cal blows another cakewalk. I don't think there's a lot of respect for Kansas State And they just got outplayed as far as I was concerned. Kansas State was the better team yesterday on the court. The Miami Hurricanes looked good. That looks like a team that could at the very least throw a scare into Houston this week in Kansas City, because Miami and Jim Larrañaga, we talk about coaches that get the most out of their teams and have them playing well at this time of year. Larrañaga does that over and over again. This is a guy that got to an Elite Eight a year ago as a 10 seed. And that was not much of a contest last night against Indiana. Every time the Hoosiers made a little bit of a push, Miami made several punches back. And Isaiah Wong, who I didn't see a lot of this year, the ACC Player of the Year, he would just get you a tough bucket. We talk about guards that can just score in the half court when things break down. Tyson Walker, A.J. Hogard, Marquise Noel. How about Isaiah Wong from Miami? He was outstanding last night. And the Miami Hurricanes are back in the second weekend yet again. And Larrañaga is in his mid-70s, but that guy looks like he could still coach. I mean, I don't think he's lost a pep in his step at all. And that's another, you know, I'll have other things from the other reactions from the Sweet 16 and the teams that are, well, the round of 32, now that we are at the Sweet 16, the teams that are still playing. But Miami surprised me with how much, there was a lot of love about Drake as a trendy 5-12 upset on Miami come on Friday night. And Drake gave Miami a game, but then Miami just runs right through Indiana. And I did feel bad for Trace Jackson Davis, who is one of the most decorated IU Hoosiers of the last 10 years. And Indiana fails to get to the Sweet 16. But again, Miami was just better. So good for Miami and good for Jim Larrañaga. And yes, they can beat Houston. I'm not calling the upset. I probably won't put a dollar on the game. Although I do think if you wanted to, Miami's, I think, catching 7.5. I think that number's a little too high. They played well. That's a good team. And they'll react a little bit to the victory for Houston as well. Some more college basketball from the rest of the weekend to discuss. But I mentioned Eric Musselman, and I texted Belmer right when the game went final. Let's get an Arkansas guest on, because here are the Hogs again in the second weekend for the third year in a row under Eric Musselman. Tom Murphy covers Arkansas basketball for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Joins on the other side to talk about it. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
We've got your tournament coverage right here on the Sports Map Radio Network. Presented by HelloFresh. This spring, HelloFresh is delivering great-tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code Hoops60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. HelloFresh.com/Hoops60 and use promo code HOOPS60. Now, back to the show.
That's right. Our guest line is brought to you by HelloFresh. And we want to remind everybody that this spring, HelloFresh is delivering great tasting recipes that help you stick to your food goals, like new dietitian win options that are under 700 calories. Go to HelloFresh.com/Hoops60, code Hoops60 to get 60% off plus free shipping. Arkansas is into the Sweet 16. And before we get to our guest, here's how it sounded on Saturday.
Missed it. Oh, he tried to miss it. Off the bank. Arkansas gets it in. They get it to Black. The clock ticks. And that's it. And the Razorbacks survive and advance.
Survive and advance. Certainly the theme this time of year. And without further ado, let's bring on Tom Murphy from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, as we'll discuss just how this happened for the Hogs to get to another second weekend. Tom, thanks for your time. How are you?
Yeah, I'm doing great, man. It's a pleasure to be on the show with you.
Absolutely. Well, we certainly appreciate having you. And I just finished really lauding Eric Musselman for the job he's done here in three NCAA tournaments at Arkansas, because, of course, his first season was halted due to the pandemic. He's made the Sweet 16 every year. And in the beginning of my show, I talked about how you go from 68 to 16 real fast in this thing in just a week's time, and just getting to the second weekend is an accomplishment. I'm sure everybody in Fayetteville is thrilled to be in the Sweet 16 again.
Yeah, it's been a really challenging season with the injuries to Trevin Brazil and Nick Smith, and they've had their lulls, you know, a slow stretch to open the conference, and then they got hot for a while, and then they closed kind of slow against a very difficult schedule. But I've been maintaining for a couple of weeks now that, you know, A, they were going to make the tournament no matter what happened in those last three games, and B, they were probably going to be in the 7-10 range, and in the second round they were going to face a favored team, and that team was not going to want to play Arkansas because of the talent level, the Eric Musselman's coaching, and the pedigree, basically the thing they have going, which is three in a row, and Kansas, it was a difficult draw for Kansas.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, I think we'll get to some of the players in a second, but I think that Musselman, time and time again, even going back to when he was at Nevada, you're seeing an ability for his teams to peak at this time of year, and he just extracts every last ounce of productivity, it seems like, out of his rosters, and they keep getting better in March. And that's, you know, there's a skill in that, because we see a lot of good coaches unable to get their teams to peak this time of year.
No question. And that's kind of the point he made. His first comments after the win the other day was that, I keep telling people that we're improving, and they are. And they were by no means perfect. They got off to a really bad start against Kansas. Kansas's defense had them kind of off their game. They were settling for jump shots and weren't making many. They were down 9 and 10 in the early going. But what they did is they rebounded really well. Kamani Johnson's been a kind of a spark plug, not much of a skill guy, but he gets in there and rebounds. And then they did this with Brazil injured out for the year. Nick Smith did not score in the game. And you know, Devo Davis, even though he had 25, he had a negative plus minus. I mean, it was just it was really just kind of gritty, and they really D'd up very well. And to your point, Eric Musselman's teams, like, they know what the scouting report and the plan, and they execute it, and they were just clutch down the stretch in this game.
You mentioned Davis, you know, Ricky Council the fourth, you get double digits off the bench from Jordan Walsh. This time of year, everybody talks about guards. Is the backcourt good enough for Arkansas to keep this thing going? Because we know that obviously the matchup with Connecticut, gosh, the Huskies looked like a team that could win it all over the weekend.
Yeah, they looked really good, and they're going to be a lot tougher guard for Arkansas in terms of their big men. So the Mitchell twins, who did not get – I mean, I'm looking at their combined time. Makai Mitchell played 19-23 in that game, and his brother Mikel, who's had valuable games and valuable minutes this season, played 3 seconds in that game. So you're going to see a lot more of those two. You're probably going to see some Jalen Graham, even though these are big physical UConn guys. But to answer your question – if Nick Smith can find his shot, because I think he's 3 of 20 in the last two games, if he can find his shot, you know, they'll have a chance to beat UConn. They're going to have to play better. I mean, they shot 41% against Kansas, and they went 3 of 15 from 3-point range. If you look at the numbers, they basically shouldn't have beaten Kansas, but they shot well from the free throw line, and they rebounded with Kansas.
You know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because just going back to the Kansas win, I didn't watch that game and think that it was necessarily anything that Kansas wasn't doing. I mean, Kansas had 4 of its starters in double figures, and it just felt like Arkansas played better in the guts of the game. Is that how you saw it down the stretch?
Yeah, they did play better in the guts. And I think sometimes that pressure factor, the number one seed, sometimes I think teams start to think about that. And Eric Musselman has got this team not worrying about what they're seeing, you know, anything like that. And I think Kansas had the more pressure and, you know, the possessions late in the game, who's going to take the shot, how are we going to create this shot, probably affected Kansas more than it did Arkansas.
Tom Murphy, our guest here as we're talking Arkansas men's hoops, as he covers the Hogs for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Tom, we're based in Houston, and I go to school, or I work, excuse me, with a couple of Texas Longhorns. And, you know, I talked with them about, well, you know, Rodney Terry's safe, right? Like, he's gotten to the Sweet 16. And a couple brought up the possibility of maybe Texas, because it's Texas, and they go big, trying to make a call to Eric Musselman. Is that something that you think might happen, maybe already has happened? Like, what are your thoughts there?
I don't know about already, but obviously Arkansas fans, when the whole Beard situation went down earlier, were concerned about it. I give it not great odds, A, because I think Rodney Terry's done a fantastic job, and as the people pointed out on the broadcast, he needs to be hired as a permanent coach.
Yeah.
So I think you would take a curveball somehow in the mix for the scenario you paint to come to light. I believe it's his job, and honestly, I hope it is. I don't know the inner workings or what could, you know, the Board of Trustees or whomever down there could decide. But Texas has had a phenomenal season. In fact, I picked Texas, Baylor, A&M. I picked Texas against A&M in round two. That didn't happen, but I picked Baylor to go far and Houston. So this is a good postseason year for Texas hoops.
Okay, let's close back on the Arkansas front. Regardless of what happens here against Connecticut, just what can you tell us about the administrative commitment to the basketball program? And, you know, we're just talking about Musselman, and I'm sure whether it is this year or moving forward, there could be another big opening at some point down the line that tries to pry him away. What can you tell us about, you know, have administratively things ramped up in terms of the dollars and the commitment to the basketball program? Because obviously a lot of these programs in the SEC, you know, save for probably Kentucky, like a lot of them are football first schools. So what can you tell us about how invested they are in basketball there in Arkansas?
Oh, yeah, major investment. In fact, Hunter Yurecek, the AD, formerly at Houston, made a pitch to the Board of Trustees last week for renovations to Walton Arena. You know, it was constructed right before the national championship season in 94, and it needs some renovations. And the financial commitment to Eric Musselman and his staff has been great.
Mm-hmm.
I think, you know, Arkansas at its best is a national power type team. Yeah, it was dormant for 25 years, but I think Eric Musselman realizes with the resources here, playing in the SEC right now, you can be as good as you want to be, and their recruiting has been phenomenal. He's being rewarded by the administration with, you know, salary bumps. I don't know. It would take a money bag school. It would take a Texas type
right.
thing probably to pique his interest. And I don't mean Kentucky. Well,
yeah, what's going on there? Cal's not the most popular guy right now.
No, he's not. I'm just not going to go there. I just think that Musselman's family is happy and satisfied, and I don't see during this postseason or this offseason a jump. So we'll see how it goes from here. But, yeah, the administration is completely on board with Musselman.
Quickly, do you know when it comes to Kentucky and Cal, like, do you have any thoughts there? Just 30 seconds here.
When it comes to what? I'm sorry, the question.
Cal and kind of what happens next in Lexington.
Yeah, you know, there's always disgruntled Kentucky fans. They felt like they should have beat Kansas State. But look, Kansas State is a fine team, and I love the way Coach Tang put it. You know, we had more dudes. those old dudes in the past at Kentucky, they weren't in this game. We had more dudes. And I love Kansas State. In fact, I picked them to go to the Final Four in one of my brackets. And I don't know. I get the sense that lifetime contract probably comes with a massive buyout.
Yeah,
so
that's a good point.
We might be seeing Cal for another year.
All right, there's Tom Murphy, Arkansas Hoops for the Arkansas Democrat Gazette. Tom, safe travels to Vegas. I'm sure you'll be out there, and best of luck covering the rest of the tournament.
Appreciate it, man. Enjoyed it. See ya.
All right. We'll take a timeout. Some final reactions from the rest of the teams that are still playing into the Sweet 16 as we roll on here. Greg Frank, First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.
Is First Name Sports on the Sports Map Radio Network. From the Sports Map Radio studios, here's Greg Frank.
All right, so let's get to some other conclusions from the weekend in the Big Dance, and then there is a lot of college basketball coaching news to discuss as well, as it is a very busy time of year off the court as well in college hoops with coaching changes going on. A lot of kids going into the transfer portal. It's interesting. I've heard people say, like, should there be a freeze on the transfer portal activity? Because if you're not playing right now, there is, you know, an immense opportunity here for these other schools to be recruiting kids that are in the transfer portal and to trying to kind of start getting a leg up on their rosters for the following season. All while the idea is to keep playing this time of year. And, you know, the 16 schools that are still playing obviously are focused on the games that everybody should want to play in. So it's just obviously a lot of things going on off the court in college basketball as well. But I mentioned a little bit earlier, actually in the last segment there with Tom Murphy, our guest from the Arkansas Democrat Gazette, about the upcoming opponent for the Arkansas Razorbacks, and that's the Connecticut Huskies. And Dan Hurley was one of the guys who I highlighted last week, as I believe he was under the most pressure of any of the coaches that are that were in this tournament, because he had not won an NCAA tournament game before this weekend at Connecticut, which is the preeminent program of the Northeast. It is the biggest brand. I'm sorry, Syracuse fans. It's Connecticut. And Jim Calhoun won 3 national championships there. Kevin Ollie won a national championship there. But since that title, almost a decade ago now, with Shabazz Napier and company, the Connecticut Huskies have not been what we've grown to expect them to be in stores each year. Or it might be Hartford. It's a small state. But regardless, Dan Hurley appears to be restoring order in a year in which I think he really needed to. Because, as I said, this is now his 5th season at Connecticut. And we're past the point where you can just say COVID, or, you know, this kid went into the portal or whatever. It's a big year for him. They were preseason top 5, top 10 team. And there were some ups and downs in the Big East. And the Big East is a good league. It's not what it used to be, but still very good league. And the metrics say that Connecticut is one of the best teams in the country, perhaps not seeded as such as a number 4, but the Huskies were dominant against Iona and St. Mary's. And they looked like a team that can win this entire tournament. And Adama Sanogo, for as much as we talk about guards, here's a big guy that is just an absolute menace. And a monster to try and deal with on the glass. And gosh, he even stepped out and made a 3 against Iona, I saw on Friday. And St. Mary's tried to hang around. Okay, I like the another guard. I like Aiden Mahaney at St. Mary's, the freshman. But when all was said and done, Connecticut was too much. Sanogo 24-8. Also had double digits from a couple of their guards. Connecticut, as I said, every bit the part of a national championship contender. And gosh, that West region is juicy. If you're a college basketball fan on the West Coast and you can get to Vegas for the weekend, I would highly recommend it, because not only do we have Arkansas really playing good enough, as we just talked about with our guest, that's a great game, Arkansas and Connecticut. But then how about the other regional semifinal there with the UCLA Bruins taking on the Gonzaga Bulldogs? And UCLA, you know, we'll see what happens here with David Singleton, because they've been embattled with a lot of injuries, the Bruins recently. And Northwestern certainly made them earn it on Saturday night. But UCLA gets it done, and they're back in the second weekend. Jaime Jaquez with 24 points, hits a couple of threes. Amari Bailey had a nice game. And the Bruins, we talk about coaches at this time of year who get their teams to show up and maximize what they have. Mick Cronin does that just as good as Eric Musselman does. Third year in a row that UCLA has been to the second weekend. And It's you know, the similarities with UCLA and Arkansas. Coaches were hired after the 2019 NCAA tournament. Pandemic obviously wipes out the March Madness in 2020. And then the 3 seasons for Eric Musselman at Arkansas, the 3 seasons for Mick Cronin at UCLA, both coaches have been to the second weekend all 3 times. And Mick Cronin, of course, made the Final 4 in 2021. And who did he play in one of the greatest national semifinal games ever? It was the Gonzaga Bulldogs. And here is Gonzaga now squaring off with UCLA in a very juicy Sweet 16 game on Thursday night. And Gonzaga, okay, I have, they were my pick to win the thing. because I thought that mentally Gonzaga is kind of going to like the fact that there's not as much pressure, it feels like, on the Zags. They're a couple seeds down on the seed line. Usually they're a one seed. This year they're a three seed. Nobody's saying, oh, well, who did Gonzaga play in the non-conference and this and that? Everybody's trying to take down Gonzaga every year. That's another guy. I mentioned in the beginning of the show, don't tear down Matt Painter. A lot of people try and tear down Mark Few and Gonzaga when all they do is win. And they've been to Monday night a couple of times, lost to North Carolina in 2017, lost to Baylor in 2021. But Gonzaga faced a little adversity last night for sure. Down at half against TCU by five, but a big second half led by Drew Timmy, who has had an outstanding college career up there in Spokane. 28-8 for the big guy for the Zags. And they advance. Rasir Bolton hit some big shots. They advanced past the TCU team that was up to the task last night. Mike Miles Jr. hit some really high-level shots for the Horned Frogs in defeat. But Gonzaga and UCLA, like, get your popcorn ready for that one because that's a lot of fun. A few other things. How about Princeton just running right through Missouri on Saturday? Okay. The largest margin of victory for a 15 seed in the tournament. Talked a little bit in the beginning of the show about Fairleigh Dickinson not just laying down against Florida Atlantic last night, especially when it got behind 9-0. Well, Princeton, after the biggest win probably in the history of the program against Arizona on Thursday, they come out Saturday and they just take it to Missouri. Game was really not all that competitive. And Princeton is in the second weekend in the South region. And they'll get Creighton, who's speaking about taking it to an opponent. How about Creighton running right through Baylor, the national champion from a couple years ago? So, a couple of statements there. Listen, I understand it's not the juiciest game, Creighton and Baylor. But let's give those schools their due. They both played well. Creighton took it to Baylor last night. So Creighton out of the Big East to the Sweet 16, Connecticut out of the Big East to the Sweet 16, and the Xavier Musketeers out of the Big East to the Sweet 16 as Sean Miller, back at Xavier for a second stint, has made it to the second weekend in his, I believe, his first year on the job in his second stint there. Sean Miller, a Pitt alum, I might add, as Sean Miller and Xavier in the first game yesterday eliminate Pitt. A magical season for the Pittsburgh Panthers comes to a conclusion at the hands of just a better team than Xavier. And Xavier played like it. I mentioned Rodney Terry. You think he's their guy now, right? At Texas, they get to the Sweet 16. Dylan Dessou was exceptional on Saturday night against Penn State. Again, a Penn State team that was up to the task. Penn State played well. But Penn State falls just short. Wrong team in the Big Ten there. As Texas gets it done. And will now play Xavier. And I'm sure a lot of people already salivating over a possible Texas-UH regional final in Kansas City, which would be on Sunday if we get there. I think Rodney Terry's their guy, but it's Texas, so I guess you can never speak with certainties there. And then another game which I haven't touched on, which I will now, I thought Tennessee really just out-toughed and out-physical Duke. I mean, Tennessee, I was watching the guys at the Field of 68 last night. They do a really good job. They always have a different crew there. Rob Doster, Terrence Oglesby, and Tyler Hansborough on the show last night. And they're talking about how Tennessee and Michigan State, two teams that don't mind playing in the mud and, you know, don't mind the muck-it-up games, the physical games, the beat-you-up-on-the-glass games. That's what it felt like Tennessee was doing. That's a young Duke team. Tariq Whitehead, Derek Lively, and Tennessee just punched them in the mouth too many times for the Blue Devils' liking. Tennessee to the second weekend. Take a timeout. Let's get to some of the coaching rumors in college basketball. Some big news in the Big East. We'll talk about that on the other side. We'll mix in a little NFL and some World Baseball Classic. And I have a food segment coming your way as well. All of that still to come. First Name Sports, Sports Map Radio.